Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with some samples. So if you have read That Sounds Fun, you probably remember the story of me trying to get a dog and then realizing I was allergic. Sad day. And this is why I'm glad I found Claritin D, because an allergy attack is literally the worst. So I am thankful to have it on hand around my friends, pets, and other things. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers, and Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Amen to that. There are also a lot of seasonal allergy sufferers over here at AFD Inc. and at the That Sounds Fun Network. So Claritin D really works for this crew. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It is time to live Claritin clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. So you can find Claritin D at your pharmacy counter. Just ask a pharmacist for Claritin D at the pharmacy counter, and you don't even need a prescription. Just go to Claritin.com right now and you can get a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed. Hi, friends. Happy Saturday. Welcome to another episode of That Sounds Fun. I'm your host, Annie F. Downs. I'm so happy to be with you today. We have got a great show. It is day 10 of the 2021 Christmas party. So we've just got a couple more episodes in our 12 days in a row of Christmas episodes. Imagine that we're all just still like mingling around at this lovely party. Nobody wants to leave because we're having such a good time chatting with our friends, eating some great stuff, talking to dear friends. Don't miss the earlier episodes of our 12 days. They are so good. And definitely doing the trick of getting me in that Christmas spirit. The soundtrack of our party is Little Drummer Boy from For King and Country. It's from their album, A Drummer Boy Christmas. It's so good. Be sure to check it out. Today on the show, I get to talk with some dear friends, Jeff and Alyssa Bethke. They've been on the pod before, but they've been busy since then, both releasing books this year and, you know, doing the rest of their life too. Alyssa released Satisfied, Finding Hope, Joy, and Contentment Right Where You Are. And Jeff's new one is called Take Back Your Family. They're parents, bloggers, YouTubers, and hosts of the Real Life podcast. They're the friends at the party that are going to pull everyone into a conversation and ask all the good questions. So here's my conversation with Jeff and Alyssa Bethke. When guys grow out their facial hair, how old are you when you figure out what your face does and doesn't do?
You know, I'm a bad person to ask because I think I was 31 or 29 when I was like, oh, I have a little bit more than fuzz now. I was a late bloomer, but I think that's probably like an early college thing where you start seeing that awkward, like, oh yeah, they can really grow it, or it starts looking very inappropriate.
But even in your own face, are you like, huh, there's no hair on that part? Or are you like, oh wow, I have a beard?
I've literally sat and stared at the mirror and I'm like, why does a gap exist there? Like, why is there some physiological response where this has hair and then I have a weird gap? So if anyone's listening and you're like a beardologist, I would love to hear from you.
Yeah. Well, lucky for you, we have a lot of beardologists in the audience.
What are you going
to say? I said, do you gain status as a man if you can grow like a full beard?
Yeah, that's definitely street cred. If you can actually show that, like Johnny over there. Like Johnny over there is like, that's street cred beard.
So, but when does street cred start mattering? Like fifth grade or like college?
That would be a fascinating question to survey, man. I would say college. Okay. That's what I would say.
Your brain is so Barna shaped. You're like, let's survey everybody. Let's ask about the gospel and beards.
I would love to see the poll and the data and the sample size.
Yeah, we'll just get Barna right on that. They've got tons of time. They're not working on anything more important than what age men start feeling insecure about their facial hair.
They have a beardologist on staff.
That's right. You guys, welcome back to That Sounds Fun. I'm so glad you're here for the Christmas party. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us. This is so fun.
We're so stoked. I feel like, have we done a Christmas one before with you? Was it actual Christmas or a couple years ago?
No, we
or
just
what?
Talked about Christmas, but it was not technically on that. Now, we've done couples. Let's just run through how many times y'all been on the show. Y'all are VIPs. Episode 56, which is a long time ago, back in 2017.
It was. Wow, I was 17 years old.
Both of you. And then both of you were on in 2019. And then, Jeff, you were back at the end of 2019. So,
man,
that is how
it's
been.
It is the best show, and you're the best. And we love what you're doing out in this space. So thank you.
You're kind. Okay, Maui and Vermont. You have two homes. Go. This is the update. You now own place in Vermont.
That sounded way bougier than it is. We live in Maui, which also sounds, you know, it's still a real life, by the way. I do need to say that. There's a disclaimer that when you say that, it's like, there is sin here. Genesis 3 made it here, just to let people know that. And then, yes, we have some mentors and partners of ours that we really care about hospitality. So we have leaned in pretty heavily to that the last couple of years. And so, yeah, we are part owners of a 500-acre farm in Vermont called OQ Farm, and it's massive. 8 buildings. We do weddings there, retreats there. Families can stay there in just one of the homes. It's super fun, and we love it. So, yes, live in Maui, and we go to Vermont a lot for that.
Talk to me about getting on a plane in Maui and getting off in Vermont. 19 layovers?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just say those people that have private jets, I get it.
Like that. You're finally like, I understand.
No, we can't say that publicly. Private jets are sinful. Never do a GoFundMe.
They're not, guys. If you can do it, it's the way to go.
Well, we definitely can't do it.
We are going. That would be
going,
a dream. That would be fun.
Yes, we go to Vermont in Delta 37A.
Yes.
Is what we go to Vermont.
And it takes 2 days.
Yeah, so this is actually fascinating. Like, crazy to be in the same country. It's a random thing. But, like, you can go from Vermont to London and back before it takes us to get from Maui to Vermont. Because it's like a 6 to 7 hour flight, depending on the wind, to like the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Then you get on another flight on the West Coast, Seattle or LA. That's usually a 5 or 6 hour flight then to Boston. And then the farm is so rural, it's a 2.5 hour drive from Boston.
Okay, so you just go to Logan. You fly into Logan and then you drive from there. Yeah, because I was picturing like East Coast to tiny airport to tiny airport to front door.
Oh. The little prop plane that, what's that movie with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock? It's not on the East Coast, but it's in Alaska. The Proposal. But yeah,
Proposal.
That little prop plane they take out to Alaska and they kind of just like zip out on this little two-seater. Yeah, that's
so
what you're
doing. I thought y'all are private planing at this point.
Never.
But I mean,
Never.
Wisdom would say keep a car at the airport or something, right? Like there's got
you. Yes, wisdom does say that.
Yes.
We're not wise, but wisdom would say that.
Yeah. I would imagine y'all in the future, there will be a time where there will be a Bethke vehicle or a farm vehicle at the airport. Yeah.
We're trying.
To get y'all back.
We're trying. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, you'll have to visit. It's actually a really fun, special place.
I have never been to Vermont and I am dying. I mean, Lissa, tell me about the fall in Vermont. Did you get to see it?
Ask
the white girl about the fall vibes in Vermont.
Okay. Are you a Gilmore Girl fan?
To the death. Yes.
Yeah, okay. We are.
It is like literally there's a town outside of it where we go that is where they probably did the like overhead shot of Gilmore Girls. So it is
at the start with the little church.
Yes.
Yes.
It is the quaintest, cutest town I've ever been in. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful. So when I went though, the leaves weren't fully, it's like you only get like what?
You have like 7 or 8 days to time it and it's max. Like what do they call it? Leaf season or whatever, but yeah, it's like you have like seven or eight days.
Is it peak leaf?
Yeah, peak leaf season, and it's like 8-9 days. So you got to time it.
I was like right before it, which was still beautiful. But weren't you there?
Yeah, the peak? me and John Tyson, we actually were there for a retreat during that time for our art of teaching stuff, and it's actually Maui's epic. But I will say the upper northeast when leaves are changing colors can compete for the Mount Rushmore of prettiest places in the U.S.
Yeah, I have a funny question about Vermont. Are you experiencing any of the like spiritual life of that part of the country? Just has such a different spiritual life than the South or even than the West Coast. Are y'all experiencing any of that?
Yeah, well, I think what it reminds us a lot of where we were born and raised was like Seattle area. So because the more you go up, there's the West Coast in general, but I definitely think California has its own culture. Mm-hmm. Once you get up, I would consider the Upper West and the Upper Northeast. Upper Northwest, Upper Northeast, actually very similar spiritual climates with the Upper Northeast statistically. Sorry, I'm jumping to my Barna side again.
Come on.
Being the least churched. So even if they go like one step farther than Portland and Seattle.
The Northeast is one step further post-Christian from the Northwest.
That's like proven. The actual amount of church attendance and all that stuff. Yeah.
I was actually really surprised because I had grown up in Seattle and I feel like I didn't know anything was more than Seattle. So
Yeah. So anyone listening who's doing work out there, you are amazing and you're trenching it out and we need you. Mm-hmm.
I did a speaking event in Maine a couple of years ago. And I remember after I got off the stage, I thought, I've gone to a lot of cities and seen a lot of people who get to go to a lot of conferences. And then you come up here and they are starving. Yes. They're starving.
Yeah. Because it's kind of their only, totally. Yes. It's a totally different culture doing stuff in the South where they're like, oh, do I want to go see Taylor Swift on Sunday or do I want to see Shawn Mendes on Tuesday? And it's the same thing with like religious stuff. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, do you want to go see, you know, yeah, do you want to go to IFCA on Monday or do you want to go to this mega church on Tuesday? Yes. And it's like, but yeah, the upper Northeast, it's like they get one thing a year, you know, and so that's a fascinating dynamic.
How'd y'all end up with the farm in Vermont? Did your partners already own it? Was it like already in their lives? Okay.
They'd owned it for like 20 years and I had gone there just for a long time as a friend. And then she actually didn't even come until just recently this last year. And I was just like, babe, this place is amazing. We love it. And so, yeah, long story short, we had some conversations with them and they wanted to take it to a level of hospitality that they just, that they fully couldn't by themselves. And so we jumped in with them and it's been really fun. It's a special place. It's just, oqfarm.co. People can just go check out pictures and check out the snow and the leaves. It's fun. And there's horses, alpacas, sheep, all that stuff.
And y'all are doing a hospitality thing, kind of a new compound in Maui as well, right? From when I was
with exact same thing out here, except out here is a little bit more sluggish, meaning we got to like still in the permit process and all that. But yes, exact same thing out here. We have a couple acres and we took a big bet this last year. I mean, it's not, you know, I think some people can think some of that stuff's like, oh, you know, you're so, you know, I don't know, well off or privileged, but it's like, man, we took some serious risk and debt. Like these are business moves. These are like, we're putting it all on the line. Like we're putting, you know, we're pulling out equity and we're putting cash as, you know, homes on the table and stuff like that to be taken by the bank if it doesn't go well. So I find that a fascinating part of the conversation, but we love it and we want to, which is also like a side conversation on dreams in general. Like, you know, if you feel like the Lord's called you to it, then take a jump, you know, jump in faith, jump in risk. And if it doesn't go well, that doesn't mean the Lord didn't call you to it. That just means maybe it failed.
That's right.
Maybe you wanted to learn something, maybe whatever.
Man, I wish there was a direct line between trying and succeeding. There just isn't.
No.
Even on our best days, even if you've had the longest quiet time you've ever had and you fasted and prayed longer and you've been Sabbathing like a pro, you could still try and fail. And that is still God.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, Jesus is the perfect example. I mean, that dude never messed up and then died a horrible, brutal death.
Yes.
And was hated by people and wanted to get killed before that and was going to be shoved off the cliff in that one story. Like, it's just, there's like, you know, turmoil, sweating blood. Like, it's not one-to-one and it never is, which is fascinating.
This is the oldest quote in the world, but I saw it like Matt Damon's on a commercial saying it or something. And he says, fortune favors the brave. And I have really been thinking about it because I want y'all to respond to that quote as well. My big response has been, I think it depends on how you define fortune.
Yeah, totally.
Yes. I'd love to hear what you think. I think one thing, I'm going to use this as a metaphor because I don't want to talk about just physical money, but I am into some of these, you know, I read a lot about with family and inheritance and, you know, business and stuff like that. So I'm using it as a metaphor, but statistically, most of the wealthiest people in the world have gone like bankrupt like four times. So it's like now normal people, when a normal person starts thinking about the possibility of them going bankrupt, they act like they are like undone. They act like their life is over, which at some level, like there is a level which that's hard. I'm just saying even identity wise, like I can't be the person that goes bankrupt.
I'll never recover.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I'll never recover from that. The rich people are like, that's Tuesday.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, and that's a fascinating thing that no one talks about. Like the wealthiest people, just because they're willing to push that line on bets and hedge and risk that makes them go bankrupt or makes them make a lot of money. I think that's a metaphor.
Chris Rock says you always lose your first money.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think that's a good metaphor for a faith and risk in general that the Lord calls us to. I do think it's a little bit of like, we have so much passive faith in the American church. And so we wonder why God doesn't show up. And it's like, you're not putting yourself in any position where he even has to act, where he even has to show up, you know? And so I don't know, but how would you respond to that?
Yeah. Well, it just made me think immediately when you said that I was, not thinking fortune physically, but like
blessing.
The blessing. And I think
health.
The Lord, you know, the Lord talks about there's so much blessing when you follow him. And I think he doesn't want us to be timid people scared or fearful or, you know, like he wants us to be brave people. Even if you think about the people you're most like the saints or the people
inspired
you most
by.
Look up to, the most inspired, your heroes, you don't say like, wow, they were so cautious. I want to be just like them. You know,
right.
Like they were passionate people. They took risks. They may have failed. They may have like been turned by the world, but they knew the blessing of the Lord and that he was their everything. And so I think even in a like a Christian spiritual context, that is so true. Like, yeah. And the Lord blesses his children. Amen. Our biggest blessing is that we get him. He's our inheritance. And so.
He's our fortune. put that on a cup.
Put that on a cup. Where's that mug?
Merch coming out next week.
Merch.com. It's coming. We had Mike Todd on a couple of months ago talking about his book, Crazy Faith. It is. Have y'all read it yet?
Parts of it. I haven't gotten through it yet, but he's amazing.
It is something else. Talk to me about what you've experienced in the last year with all this and the other things. I mean, the art of teaching, the Lego stuff. I mean, we're going to talk about all of it, but talk about what faith really looks like for y'all versus you said the Western church, the American church has a casual faith. Is that what you said?
Yeah, really passive. For some reason, the first thing I thought of when you said that is probably the most that our faith has been stretched in the last couple of years is we had a really horrible business partnership go pretty sour a couple of years ago. And
talk
you know,
about failure.
Yeah. And you know, and I'm a big fan of like, there's always, something to blame for both sides in this, but this one was definitely like where the person just like got crazy, just like literally got crazy. And I think everyone would admit that. But anyways, what was interesting about that is that was a big thing of faith because we were very yoked to him and a lot of our stuff was very yoked to him. And that made me really nervous. This is actually a sign of where Alyssa is way more faithful than me and way more spirit-led than me. I was like, man, I just can go practical pretty easily and not lean into this stuff as heavily. And Alyssa basically, you know, like if we were to, like, it was actually our move. Like we saw this and we were saying like, man, we don't feel good about this anymore. We don't feel good about the decisions you're making, the trajectory you're putting your life on, and like just, you know, kind of walking away from everything that, you know, you've built for 20 years in regards to faith, people, et cetera. So we're like, well, do we just, you know, you kind of had that classic temptation of like, well, can we just kind of sweep it under the rug and just still do our life? And I was, you know, kind of thinking about all that. And then Alyssa just came down hard. She was like, I prayed about it. The Lord said to divorce, like separate. I had a dream and like, it was vivid. It was exact. And so like, we're doing it. And then I just immediately saw the amount of dollars in our head that like it was going to leave, like, mm-hmm. you know, and it got actually really bad. It got really traumatic financially, emotionally, spiritually. But there was a resoluteness that she had of the faith part that like, it was, you know, there was like an anchor to the moment. Like that's, we made the right call and that's just what the Lord said. And that's all that matters. So I don't know if you want to talk about that or a different example, but I feel like that to me is the first one I thought of like when faith going from active to passive from passive to active is usually when it's going to cost you something in anything, you know, emotional, spiritual, whatever. Are you willing to make that call even when it's going to cost you something? And we've had to make that call. And I probably wouldn't have made that call single. So I'm thankful for her.
Man, I feel like I'm learning so much about faith. I think it's a really sweet thing that the Lord, you know, that story in the Bible where I can't even think of it right now, but in the New Testament where he's like, Lord, give me the faith to believe. Because yeah. I think on
help,
our
help my
own,
unbelief.
Help,
yeah.
my,
help
unbelief.
My unbelief. Yeah.
On our own, we don't have faith. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, some people I feel like are like, their gift is faith. They have way more faith than I do. But we can ask the Lord, like, Lord, give me faith. And I'm realizing more and more that this life on this side of the earth or this side of heaven, we like, it is by faith. Mm. We walk by faith. We don't, there's so much that we don't know. There's so much we don't see. And so we have to walk by faith. Yeah. And, but it's not like it's just like this, you know, worldly, like, with your eyes closed, you just jump off blind. It's yeah. like, we have the Holy Spirit. We have the Word of God. We have community. We have mentors. There are like things set in place for yeah. us to take those actions of faith. And I think for me, when I know that I know that I know the Lord is telling me to do something, it's like, I know I'll be disobedient if I don't do it. And so it's like, yeah. I'm going to act in faith and I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I know that I'm obeying the Lord and I'm staying close to him. And so it's worth it. And I think with that business transaction that happened, the thing that I learned the most was that when you obey the Lord in faith, he is so faithful to take care of you, like yeah. to be your hiding place too. Even when it feels like people are putting your name down, you're misunderstood. There's things said about you that aren't true, but it's like, you can't defend yourself. It's like, that's okay. Cause the Lord fights for me. The Lord knows who I am in my own heart. And so just that, like, we learned a lot yeah. about the Lord, like really hiding in the Lord and letting him fight for us. Like, not that you're cowardly, but that you don't have to
defend yourself.
Defend yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to do the right thing because he's asking you to. And then we really realized that he like, and I don't know if it happens like this all the time, but he like blessed that, you know, in ways spiritually, in our characters, in relationships, yep. but also financially. It was a huge risk, and yet he provided in these crazy ways. And it's not that we obeyed because of that. It was just like this added blessing where it was like, okay, Lord, we really see that all this is yours. And you give and you take away. And so, yeah, it really built our faith.
I already purchased the Art of Teaching series, but it's not available to me yet. Comes in January. You can go check the receipts. I really already paid for it.
Like 2 weeks away. 2 weeks away.
I can't wait. I'm dying.
I mean, you in the comments of people being like, I bought it, but I don't have it yet. You're like, I said it in the caption.
I know. I'm like,
and
guys.
In the video.
I mean, you know, it's like internet people don't read. I don't read. So I get it. I have empathy, but I'm like, but yeah, it's actually exciting because it shows people are really excited
for it.
And I'm stoked because I get to work with, you know, two of my favorite like mentors and preachers and teachers.
Yeah,
that video was fire.
Yeah, the trailer was sick.
It was unreal. So I don't have the content yet. So I'm going to get a sneak peek of it right here. Because you talked about, Alyssa, you talked about how you had a dream and y'all made some decisions based on that dream. And I am teaching next Sunday at Cross Point about Joseph. And the courage of Joseph, because twice he literally woke up from a dream and changed their course of their life.
Yeah.
Talk about his courage, his faith. Give me some nuggets that and it's a Christmas episode. So let's talk about Jesus's, what is he? Jesus's stepdad? No. Is he Jesus's? I don't know. Jesus's earthly father.
Yes, maybe. Yes.
But I just think that I think we under discuss how Joseph just heard God and obeyed.
Yeah. Which first of all, I've never heard him called the stepdad, but it's kind of true.
Right. He married Jesus's mom.
Yes. No, but it makes total sense. I love that. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the hope of Advent, right? Is that the hope of Advent is that God is ushering into darkness to bring light. And I think dreams are such a fascinating metaphor for that, because that's literally the like, it's like dark, it's like you're sleeping. It's kind of this, it's like this metaphorical darkness, and God's like bursting through with light, which would be a dream, right? Imagination, story. I love too, by the way, the thing I love about dreams is that God, it shows God speaks through story. God doesn't speak through facts. God speaks through stories. Facts are always in the vessel of story. Like, but I find that very fascinating. And so, yeah, I think that's exactly what it is God speaks and he ushers and he moves. The thing I love about the dream thing, and you even hear this now, you know, being very prominent in like the Middle Eastern church right now, is to me, I do feel like there's a level at which, now I'm talking about the macro, but like there's a level at which kind of the dreams are like the people that are having those, that kind of like experience with the Lord. It's feel like a front line of some type of battle. Mm-hmm. Meaning like when they show up in scripture, when they show up macroly, I mean, of course, you know, everyone even in the US hasn't, but like where you're hearing the massive stories of like Jesus is primarily revealing himself through dreams. People are saying in like Iran, you know, Saudi Arabia, stuff like that. I feel like there's a frontline aspect to that. I feel like that's almost like kind of one of his primary like frontline warfare weapons. And I find that a fascinating way to think about it.
Hey friends, just interrupting this conversation real quick to share about another one of our incredible partners, Simplified and their Simplified Planner. Y'all remember my BFF, Emily Lay? She's been a guest on the pod a couple of times. Well, she's created the Simplified Planner when she was young, busy, overwhelmed, and a mom. She needed somewhere to write out her thoughts and her to-dos just to help her keep it all together. Simplified's mission is to equip and inspire women with the tools that they need to simplify their lives, and their cornerstone product is the Simplified Planner. Get everything out of your head and onto paper so you can spend more time focusing on the things that matter. Does my whole entire team have Simplified Planners ready to use for the new year? Well, technically, no, the guys don't, but all the gals on the team do. But the guys can have one if you want, Johnny. Maybe. Okay. All the gals have them. In fact, we were just talking about how we can't wait for the new year to get started in our fresh new planners. 2022 editions are available now. If you're not a paper planner person, how do you do your life? But you do you. Simplified also has tons of other beautiful products that help you simplify your life too. Notepads, baby books, art prints, journals, and more. Just go to emilylay.co/thatsoundsfun and use the code thatsoundsfun15 for 15% off your order. Again, that's emilylay.co/thatsoundsfun and use the code thatsoundsfun15 for 15% off your order. Get your Simplified Planner so we can be 20s.
Hi, I'm Bill Haslam, the author of Faithful Presence. My favorite Christmas song is the best Christmas song, What Child Is This?
And now back to our conversation with Jeff and Alyssa. How do we know when we've had a dream?
Or just had dinner.
Yeah. How do you know? How do you know if you move your whole family to Egypt, like Joseph did? How do you know if the dream is from God in such a way that you should shape your life around it? And how do you know when it's what that little cricket says, a dream is a wish your heart makes? How do you know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, Alyssa's enrolled in seminary, and I'm a seminary dropout, so she's going to answer that one.
You're going to answer. That's not true. I haven't started yet.
She's about to get her master's, and I went for like 5 days. So how do you answer that?
I feel like I'm starting to really step into like learning about dreams and hearing the Lord's voice. That's language that I wasn't taught growing up, even though I grew up in the church and went to Bible school. Truth be told, I have dreams, but I don't feel like it's like every night. I have a friend who like almost every night, she's like, the Lord is speaking through her through dreams. And I've realized that the more I have less distractions, like not really watching TV at night, not really on my phone before I go to bed, the more I'm like talking to the Lord throughout the day, the more I am dreaming, which is really fascinating.
You're always dreaming about a spiritual way or prophetically.
I feel like I can hear, I'm just more awake to hear the Lord. Like my soul is awake. But anyway, the dreams, I feel like the things for me that I'm like, okay, I think this is from the Lord is one, when I wake up and I remember it. Cause there's a lot of times I'm like, I know I was just dreaming, but like it's out. Like I don't remember a thing. If I remember it, and then if it like goes along with the Lord's heart, and if I like can't forget it. Like I had a dream a couple years ago that I literally think about every day because I think it's been like I'm still kind of living it out.
Or it still hasn't been realized yet.
It's been realized, but it was like a three-part dream. And so it's like I'm kind of like still living it. And there's like months that I was like, Lord, what are you trying to tell me? Like, what does this mean? But it feels like this is from you. Yeah. And so it's just like the more I like brought it before the Lord, the more I was like curious and asking and had other people I was like sharing it with. I'm like, does this sound totally crazy? Or is this
you're checking it with friends, community, the scripture.
Then there would be things that would happen that I was like, and it would be, I felt like the Lord was like, this is it. This is your time for that. Like, this is the dream. And obviously dreams, you know, John Mark has like a little ebook that he, I don't know. I got it in my email. He talked about dreams. I think it was dreams like that, but also dreams like the dreams that you have for your life, like desires of your heart, you know? But it's always going to be different than what you think. Like you only get a little picture of it. It's always going to be a lot harder than you think. Yes. It's always going to take a lot longer than you think. And then it's always going to be a lot better than you think. Mm. And so
if it checks all those boxes, then it was probably from the Lord.
It's probably from the Lord. Yeah.
And so those are just, I feel like I have so much to learn in that area, but those are some nuggets that I've just been like seeking the Lord with. I'm like, okay, I feel like this is lining up too.
Yeah. One, I think it's just like in the scriptures too. It's one thing that we are so averse to doing in the West is we individualize so quickly. Mm-hmm. So it's like all of those things that show up in scripture are for a community. Yeah. Even if it's an individual who's asked to obey, it's to affect and ripple into a community. Yeah. So I just feel like that's something that we check it with community, you know, submit it to community, submit it to the scriptures, kind of have these checks and balances on your own kind of wiring in the way that the Lord speaks, or else it can kind of become deformed, right? And so the dream.
So quick.
Exactly. Yes. And the dream prophetic nature side of things would be, in the more charismatic camp, which we are, you know, I have a friend who says it's funny where he says, and I would agree with him. I'm charismatic by theology, not by personality. And I would agree with that, meaning like I'm not charismatic by personality. I'm like, that's weird. I'm
just
not about
logical.
That. I don't want to do with any of that. If I see a flag, I'm running. You know what I'm saying? If the trumpet comes out, I'm definitely leaving. But I think there's a level at which those gifts are clear in scripture. Now how they get used is a different conversation and expression. But so I'm charismatic by theology, which makes me a little uncomfortable in it. But what I was going to say with that is but you see plenty of those spheres that just are ridiculous with it, like ridiculous. And you're like, that's just like every denomination has kind of the either you're overly hardened in the Reformed circle, but I know amazing Reformed people, right? You're just in, ASS for lack of a better term. I spelled it. I didn't say it, over here. But I know I have a ton of amazing Reformed friends that are not like that. I got charismatic people that teach me a ton about God and the Spirit and talking and communicating with Him in that way. And then I just know some crazies where I'm like, you're weird.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can find that anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying with that though, is I think checking it, all of that is checking it through outside of just individualization, just kind of outside mm-hmm. of yourself. If it's not, then it can quickly get deformed.
Well, also in my own brain, when I think history helps too. I've been a Christian most of my life. I've probably had 5 dreams that I really felt like were from God of the thousands of, I mean, how many, I've probably slept 16,000 nights and 5 of them, I think God was trying to say something to me. And I almost immediately tell someone, because otherwise it even morphs in my own head of like, were there 4 people there? Were there 3 people there? Or was this, you know? And so it's one of the blessings of Marco Polo is I real quick will pick up and go to my, and I'll send it to my mentor. I had 5 in my life and I had 2 this summer.
It's like, help me process this.
Yeah. Yes. What does this actually mean? Does it mean what it technically means? Or, you know, what are we waiting on? What do we pray? If this is from God, what do we do? So who do you think Joseph ran stuff by then? Do you think when he dreamed about Egypt, he ran it by his community? I would think so.
Yeah, that was tough.
Well, I just was thinking of Joseph in the Old Testament. He like immediately told his brothers and they're like, dude, like you're
right.
That's a valid point. Old Testament Joseph, New Testament Joseph, that there is going to be times where it feels, and man, that's a sticky one to pull apart. Mm-hmm. There's going to be times at which it feels disobedient to the community. There's going to be times in which it feels, man, that's a little bit of just having to have that Martin Luther spirit of like, if you have checked it to the absolute last T and dotted the last I and done your due diligence and you still feel soft in your heart, you're not hardened, blah, 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 then just like, you know, here I stand, I can do no other, you know, is the classic Martin Luther line. So it's like, I don't know.
I've got 2 people that I say to them, I'm going to tell you the craziest stuff.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if I don't say it out loud, then we can't go back in 5 years and say, you knew God was doing that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You knew that was God. Because if I don't say it out loud because I'm scared I sound too crazy, I'm not putting it on here. I'd tell y'all if we weren't recording, but I'm not putting it on here, right? But right. You got to have people that you can go like, if I'm going to actually be full of faith and believe some wild things, I have to have people that will not hold my reputation in front of me and determine my ability to hear God based on how this situation goes.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And two, this kind of gets into the more mathematical side or the logical side of like, just statistically, it's like you're going to interpret it wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
Or you're going to get it wrong. Like, and to have the expectation that that's actually going to happen relieves so many different things. Because if you have that high bar of perfection of every time I have a dream and I know it's of the Lord and then I do this and I follow and I obey and then it goes horribly wrong, then you're going to be massively cognitive dissonant of like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. Is he real? Does he speak? Whatever. But if you have the expectation of just like, I'm a human trying to become more into the image of Jesus, until I reach there, I'm not perfect, which means I might bat 200, I might bat 300, I might bat 400, but that clearly is going to mean I'm going to miss a certain amount. That's just part of the process and I'll count the chips at the end of time. That actually, you don't start doing the weird question game with God and voice and all that stuff as much, you know?
That's one of the scarier things if we're not careful about prayer and listening to God, is that very quickly you go from, I believe God for everything, to I'm not sure he's even real.
Yeah, and it's like, whoa, that is a swing. But it happens a lot because that's exactly what you're doing.
It's happened 8 times in my life. No question.
Exactly. And what it's showing, actually, I think underneath that is a subtle revelation that you already think you're perfect. Mm. And I don't mean perfect in like the world way. I mean like the spirit. Like you already feel like you're fully realized into the image of Jesus, which is not possible, you know, until the end. And so I don't know. I just think that that's like, of course there's going to, if sanctification is a process, then of course there's going to be, and you're not there yet, then at the finish line, then of course there's going to be gaps.
Yeah. But I mean, y'all are saying you made some big decisions in the last year around a dream Alyssa had. So you still jumped, right?
Yeah. And it seemed like the Lord confirmed it, which I think is, you know, you have to celebrate. You have to mark those wins, by the way. Like we're not altar people anymore. Like I can't stand that in our culture. Like, you know, every time something happened in the Old Testament that was a marking moment, an altar got built. Mm-hmm. We build no altars. Like we don't mark any moments. We just move on. And it's just like, you know, you don't mark that moment, right?
Tattoos, by the way. I get tattoos.
That's an altar. Yeah. There you go. It's like mark the moment so that you can go back to it, so that you can tell your friends about it. If you have kids, you can tell your kids about it. Like that's what, and literally, by the way, like most of the stories in the Old Testament, when they talk about altars, that's literally what he says. Mm-hmm. He's like, these are to communicate not to you, but to the kids' kids, the kids' kids' kids. basically all the generations. So in the community.
So what are the altars y'all are building? I mean, you got books out. What are the other ways you're doing that for generations to come?
Yeah, I think for us, we're so high communicative that that's usually where it lands is just telling stories to the children, like our kids. Children made them sound like we're 1900s.
The children.
Yes, and they wear those flowy Laurie Ingalls Wild dresses and we're picking blueberries. We tell our stories to the children by the fireplace.
That's what I think your mother had to be.
No.
It's not.
No. Oh, yeah.
I think that year we bought an olive tree.
Yep, that year for that specific moment, we bought an olive tree because I did some fun research on olive trees, and it was a really cool representation of that, where olive trees are one of the only trees in the world that are fire resistant. So most trees are actually like, they're like, you know, gasoline to fires. Like they suck it in.
Them in our fireplaces.
Exactly. Yeah. And olive trees are fire resistant. Like they literally have something in the chemical composition of the leaves and whatever that they still, of course, can burn up, but they're known and to be famous, which is why, by the way, you go into, and they're also very drought resistant. So that's why when you go to an Israel, you go to places like that, they're famous for the olives and the olive press and the olive trees. But yeah, you're also in just like a wasteland at some parts. You're like, this is like nothing else is growing here. And I feel like that tree represented that moment for us. So like stuff like that is a fun way to do it.
In the Garden of Gethsemane, when I was there the first time, and they said, these trees are in the same place they were when Jesus was here.
Isn't that crazy?
And it's probably been five trees. And I was like, you mean to tell me Jesus and I are seeing the same trees in the same spot?
Yeah. Is that insane?
I'm still not okay. Like, I was a mess right then, but I'm still not all right to be like, five trees ago he was here?
Yes.
Wow.
That's why everybody's got to get to Israel. I'm like, everyone needs to go to Israel. You have to see.
I always talk about this. It's like, it's crazy how it's an eastward journey, right? Where it's like, you know, I was born in Seattle, Washington, or we were born in Tacoma, Seattle, Washington, where it's like, you know, the stuff that you go to on the field trips that's really old is like 70 years old.
Yeah,
it's like seven. That's the field trip. Then you go to the East Coast and you're like, oh my goodness, the White House, the Capitol, you know, Boston, these things are 200 years old. You go across the ocean. Oh my goodness, Oxford and all, 1,000 years old? Like 1,000 years old? Then you go even farther, Middle East, and you start getting into like, you know, that era, that ancient antiquity era, which is just insane.
This.
Like it's the center of where a lot of that stuff came from. And then, you know, nerdy fact, you go even farther and then you get China, East Asia, and that place is like, man, that's just dinosaur culture.
Yeah.
Just like epic relics of incredible storytelling and connection to like civilizations forever.
Jeff, I have never thought about that history gets older the farther east we go.
I know.
Is China more than Israel?
Can we edit that out?
Does it keep going east?
Yeah.
It depends on, I guess, where you're counting from.
I just thought Israel would have been the, like...
We're not editing this out because both of us would like to ask our professor this story. Yeah, what?
Well, I mean, no. Now you guys are making me nervous. I mean, just Asia is more east than the Middle East.
Yes, right? But is it...
started in the Middle East.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, yeah, I think that I couldn't answer that. Someone has to write that in. But I think I've always read that they're both just very old.
But then I'm like, so is Eden in China? That's what my brain started doing.
The way you guys' brain, that's not what I was thinking.
Is that why we can't find it? It's in China. Yeah. We're looking in Israel and it's in China.
First of all, why I said edit it out is I thought you meant geographically. And I was like, okay, you know that.
No, I knew you're saying.
Yes. And I was like, yo, that's got to get pulled out.
No, but Alyssa and I were on the same page.
Yeah, I was like, for the sake of our ministry, that's got to get pulled out. But then it made sense. But yeah, no, I don't know. Someone will have to write in about that. I feel like to my recollection and reading, though, I do feel like stuff goes a little bit farther over there. I don't know. At least historic, because historic record keeping is not the same as maybe where the something was from.
That's
or whatever.
True. Well, and Israelites were like intense for so long.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Yeah.
Jeff, forgive me for not remembering this. My favorite of your books that you've written that I've read a billion times with the pink and blue cover.
Oh, yeah. It's Not What You Think.
You talk about history. You talk about Israel on that one, don't you?
Yeah. That one was probably my most significant, like kind of. That the elevator pitch for that book is trying to understand the way of Jesus and Christianity from a first century kind of Roman, Greco, Israel, Jewish context, like all those kind of like what was going on in all those worlds and all those societies and how that affects.
That book will never leave my bookshelf, Jeff Bethke. I love it so. I'm sorry I couldn't pull the title that quickly, but I need you to know that I love that book so much. I think I texted you from the airport when I was like, I can't stop reading this.
Well, thank you. And that's actually one of my favorite I've written, Jen. And you probably wrestled with this journey too, where it's one of my favorite I've written, but not the best-selling one. So you're like, that's a very strange journey. But I love that book.
Yes,
so thank you.
Still, okay, speaking of books, we both of you, I'm putting us a we. We're a collective we. Books this year, Take Back Your Family, Jeff is yours. Alyssa, Satisfied is yours. Satisfied is gorgeous, Alyssa. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's like a perfect hospitality book.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
It is. Talk about it, though. I mean, yeah, first one off on your own. It's been fun to watch. I am jealous, though, that she got the, like, I've wanted color interior.
The four color, right? You know, like,
basically, I've been slaving away in this paperback world for a decade.
Right.
We did the cover photo together, and I think we each took like at least 100 shots. And so then we argued with each other.
We argued over who took that one because we couldn't remember. They were so close to each other of what we took. So it's either me or her took that cover photo.
But Jeff's dream is to have like that type of cover. So yes. I was like, you can have the credit, babe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't know who technically took it, but if you read the back of that book, it says a cover art, Jeff Bethke. Yeah.
Oh man. Alyssa, what's your hope for this one? I mean, your last one, the one for teen girls would have been the last one, right?
Mm-hmm. Spoken for. Yeah. And Love the Last one at the same time. Yeah.
I mean, this is like Magnolia level beauty and tips, and it's just fantastic. What's your hope for it? Why was this the next right one?
Well, I think I was in such a season. It was, oh gosh, like 3-4 years ago now.
Books take a while, by the way, guys.
Yeah, it takes a really long time. Our kids are 3, 5, and 7 now, but they were even younger. I think I wasn't even pregnant with Lucy yet. And I just found myself like, wow, I like have gotten to this place where I feel like the Lord's fulfilled a lot of my dreams. Like we live in Maui, which that's a whole other story. I'm married, I have kids, and yet I still like wake up in the morning and I feel kind of empty. Like it's just not all that I thought it would be, and so wonderful, but also like it's still hard. There's still challenges and all those things. And I would go on Instagram to, you know, after a hard day to find inspiration or encouragement and really to be satisfied, like to have some type of satisfaction, especially as a young mom when it feels like you don't see the fruit right away. It's just nice to like have some type of satisfaction and come away feeling really empty. And so I really wanted to create a book, and I put pictures in it to just because I think as women we love beauty. I put recipes in it to like, I think meals are so important to provide opportunities to like serve your community, to get to know people, to have real like intimate relationships, which we really long for. But just they're like little essays, and so it's for especially for the busy moms.
It's kind of pick up, you can go
people
anywhere,
maybe that aren't like. Yeah, that you can just take it, read a little bit instead of swiping up to go on Instagram and coming away dissatisfied. You can open it, read a chapter, and be like, and you just on Instagram, you only get the 10% of what's going on in their life.
That's right.
Which is beautiful. But when you come from having a really hard day, or you're in a really hard season, or you're feeling these longings unmet, when you can sit down with a friend and say, like, oh, you too, like, this is how your heart is, and this is how the Lord's meeting you. And so it's really my hope to really just pour into women especially and encourage them that even in the unmet longings, even in the really hard, challenging seasons and days, the Lord is our portion, and He is so good, and He's more than enough, and He like satisfies our thirst. And so just talking about all the areas where we look to find to satisfy us, and even if they're really good, like friends or family, they still fall short in some ways. And so how the Lord really does meet every need.
Yeah.
So that's my hope, is that women would, I think the best compliment I got was a girl I hadn't met said, I read your book and it was so good, but no offense, I just shut it and opened my Bible. And I was like, that is what I want.
No offense taken. Now I would be offended, but Alyssa, no offense.
No, it's like that you are like seeking the Lord, you are realizing that like He will meet with you, and He wants to meet with you, and that you can come just as you are. I'm like, that is the greatest gift. So that's my hope.
No, Alyssa's so gifted too. It's such a good book. I would say it's for men. Like I read it. I absolutely loved it. I was absolutely encouraged. And I mean, I'm sure you wrestle with that same thing. I get so annoyed by like a Christian living book somehow being pigeonholed to a woman's book just because, now of course it's going to be the main audience, right? Just, you know, who you're talking to and the
pictures.
It
infuriates
me,
to be honest. I hate it so much. It infuriates me.
It makes no sense. It just like makes no sense. So that bothers me. I would say men listening, read the book. It's a phenomenal book. It is a great gift book for if you want to give it to someone else you know. But yeah, because you even tried to do it. You said women love beauty. You can't gender that. I love beauty. I mean, look who I married.
Oh! Nailed it.
As he pushes me out of the screen.
Got the point right there.
Hey friends, just interrupting this conversation real quick to share about another one of our incredible partners, Mercy Project. We've been talking about different forms of trafficking and how serious they are this month. And in Ghana, for example, as you've heard us say, thousands of kids are trapped in labor trafficking and the fishing trade for 12 long hours a day. It's because their families can't afford to care for them. And so they've been sold to a fisherman in hopes that the child could live another day. Sadly, many of the fishermen were once trafficked children themselves. Our partner, Mercy Projects, has taken a creative approach to addressing the issue of child trafficking and with amazing results. Their innovative strategy is forming partnerships with the villages and with the fishermen to literally teach them a better way to fish that makes them more money and replaces the need for child labor. This allows the children to be released and reunited with their families. And over the last decade, more than 200 children have gone home to live with their families. Mercy Projects is creating generational transformation in Ghana, which I think is incredible. At the beginning of December, there were 50 formerly trafficked children needing a sponsor. And as a community, we've been chipping away at that number. I'm hoping that we hear any day from Mercy Project that the need has been covered. But there's currently still a chance to help, and that's where you come in. For $45 a month, you can empower a formerly trafficked child to receive education and experience freedom. And this month, Mercy Project will randomly select a new child sponsor to travel to Ghana with their team in 2022, all expenses paid. Meet your sponsor child and their family, see the project firsthand, and experience the beauty of Ghana. Let's help all 50 of these kids start 2022 with hope. Simply text "That Sounds Fun" to 74121 to help today. Imagine how much this gift will transform communities for good. Text "That Sounds Fun" to 74121 or visit mercyproject.net/thatsoundsfun.
Hey y'all, my name's Ann Wilson and my new Christmas album is called I Still Believe in Christmas. And my favorite Christmas song is Oh Holy Night. I love just how it captures the night of Jesus being born and the beauty of it. And it's just always been a favorite of mine. And I just think it's a really beautiful and well-written Christmas song.
And now back to finish up our conversation with the Bethkes. Jeff, talk about Take Back Your Family.
Yeah, so it was, first of all, the fact that we did two books in 1 year. Yeah. We'll never do that again. So
it's
that's
insane.
Yeah, we didn't. I don't think we calculated that as well as we thought. We were like, yeah, we can do it. No, don't do
it. Well, and some things happened where it just got even closer than it was supposed to be.
Yeah, so you know the Suez Canal stuff? Remember all that where the boat turns out? Alyssa's book was like in there.
No!
She wasn't in that actual turned one, but she was a couple ships back. So it got, they had to literally, like, with only a couple weeks before launch date, had to say, okay, we're, your book's coming out 2 months later, which is kind of crazy. And so that was a whole surreal thing.
And then yours got pushed up.
Yeah, and then mine got pushed up because they wanted to make it more of, like, at the last minute, wanted to make it more of a back-to-school book. Mm-hmm. And so, because I usually get released in October. So, yeah, but I love that book. I mean, you know, it's very much at the heart of what I had talked about even a couple of last times on that podcast where, you know, our big season of what we feel the Lord has called us to is to try to equip and encourage and communicate and teach people that God's vision for family is so much bigger than they think. It's so much more, they have the opportunity to flourish there more than they think. And that most of the breakdowns that happens in most people's families is actually because they're so submersed in a Western model that is actually modern, new, and weird to pretty much anyone before 1900. Not religious, anyone, like, you know, any other culture. And so, and that the scriptural vision of family is so much more welcoming to all life stages of people in the church, more than like the Christian vision of like the kind of two mom, dad, two kids, you know, and if you're like single or something, then you feel like on the outside of that. And what I mean by that is like the scriptural vision for family is multi-generational. It's this, it's this long legacy oriented team where how do you know you're a part of a family in the scriptures? Because you have the same last name, right? Mm-hmm. So that's anyone. That's a single person, a married person, a young person, an old person. Like it's like this web and this network of relationships that's actually the scriptural vision that's very difficult for us to attain right now, given the kind of the water we're swimming in. But to know that and then at least try to swim towards it is kind of what that book talks about. Yeah, and the trite, cuter way I say it is like, it's kind of like the thesis of the book is opting out of the Western family experiment and kind of saying yes to God's vision for a multi-generational family team on mission. So that's basically what it is.
I mean, I wanted y'all to describe both of them because if we're talking about altars that you're leaving your children, you are saying a lot about 2020 and 2021 in the two books you released in 2021 as a family.
Yes. Yeah, it was a fascinating year for us, years, because obviously those books, both of those books were in the works before all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so then to get into a moment where, you know, people really had to look at their own heart, people had to slow down enough to assess the moment, their heart, their contentment level, the internet, all these different things. Then I think Alyssa steps into that. And then the level at which it made people I actually got stoked on it because I think it made my book a little easier and more fun. Where the stuff in my book is a very like most of my books, I go pretty like out of the box. So it's a very different idea of family. Like it's not the usual, like, you know, 1980s Christian, you know, like, so I was a little nervous about that. But what's fascinating is the moment actually led to so many families being very like, oh,
put it on the table.
Yeah, kind of like, oh, I can, you know, we can just kind of like, you know, just families got way riskier is maybe what I'm trying to say. It's like, oh, we need to, like, if stuff can change that quickly, then we need to do what we want to do. We need to go pursue that dream or do that thing. And so I think that was a fun moment for the book to collide with.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I can't kind of shake, as a person who doesn't have kids yet, not married yet, as y'all know, I also have to get to leave a legacy all the time. Like, I'm getting to build things that other people, what's that line from the Bible that is also quoted in Hamilton, right? Where you don't just want to sit under your own vine and your own tree.
Your like, own tree.
To what end? I don't want to sit under my own vine. I want to work until I'm done so that other people have got what they need, right? So that they'll work for the, you know. And so hearing y'all thinking through the building the altars and releasing these, I'm like, man, none of that's an accident.
Well, one thing I'll say to that too is that just because you get me fired up right there is everyone is a mother and a father. Mm-hmm. Everyone is a mother and a father. And the church needs more mothers. The church needs more fathers. There is an aspect at which one way that can play out is through biological children, but that is not the only way it can play out. The church has been built on for 2000 years, the mothers and fathers of the church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have not looked like how we think the 1950s, Leave It to Beaver, Pleasantville family, American, you know, group looks.
Yeah.
And that to me, the saints, you know, it fires me up that I think that's the church needs more mothers and more fathers, and all of us are, and I think all of us can lean into that. Now, being a mother and father means you have children at some level. And essentially, this is the heart of discipleship, right? That you are using your gifts, your wiring, your talents, your treasures, your life to leave a legacy. Mm-hmm. Who are you building that tree for, and who's going to sit underneath that tree? That's what it means to mother and father.
Yeah.
Jenny Allen and I argue about this publicly a lot, about digital discipleship versus real life discipleship.
Yes.
We literally land on the exact same spot. We just come at it from two different places. But one of the things we're doing here in 2022 is we've really outlined a year of digital discipleship, of three different big kind of tent poles in our year where we're going to disciple the people digitally. Talk to our friends listening about how do you engage in digital discipleship and in real life discipleship? Why do we need both? If you think we do.
Me and John Mark just had an argument about this about 2 weeks ago for about 3 hours.
And this is like a family discussion we've been having last month. So
yeah, family discussion. And also like, yeah, there's it can easily go to like preference and personality, which I think is farther, you know, like a John Mark or me or you and a Jenny. I can already see the easy differences, but that's the fun part about that. The sharpening. Yeah.
I am not brave enough to disagree with John Mark Comer. I don't know how. I don't know how. So good for you.
I lost, but it was a valiant effort.
Okay. Well done you. Yeah. So where'd y'all land?
I believe in it. I believe in digital. I believe in that. Do I think it has crap? Yes. Do I think in general, it's actually a net negative? I even would say yes to that. I think in general, the internet is a bad force and influence, but that's net negative, not gross. I think the gross is that there's actually, and I'm talking like in financial margin, I'm not calling the internet gross, that it, that man, there's a lot of, that's, here's my thing. Where are the hearts and eyeballs and minds of basically everyone living today? They're on the internet.
Right.
You're on the internet. So if you want to be all high and lofty and say that, you know, like, oh, no, there's no attention spans there. It's not real discipleship. Well, then you can go ahead while a whole generation just says, hey, how's it going, Satan? You know, or the Satan figure in Hebrew is the true name. But, you know, it's like, that's just basically what you're doing. Just, hey, go ahead and follow that guy. You know, go follow the accuser. And for me, it's just like, I'm not okay with that. So it feels like I want to put a foot in the sand and say, hey, now you need both. And I think that's why I want Alyssa to answer the next part, the local part, because we do believe in both. I think you have to make sure you don't only do one, because it becomes deformed, like we talked about earlier with denominations. It becomes deformed if you're only local or if you're only digital at some level. Like, your life is a representation, and your life in 2021 is lived out online and in your real world. It should be. So that's what I would say. I mean, the one last thing is, I care about this so much, I always try to think of little fun projects. Most of our stuff is kind of these digital-oriented ways of discipleship. Bible Builds is a Lego Bible curriculum online, because I want to teach kids and families the Bible really deeply and really in a holistic way. And then this one idea I'm messing with, that maybe I'm too old for, is I'm messing with this idea of kind of almost doing like a little like theology school on TikTok, where I'm messing with this, like, can I do some type of, you know, explain the books of the Bible in 60 seconds, take hot, you know, particular questions, because there's just like, there's a malnourishment in the next generation of biblical and theological literacy. And we can say, well, some people just aren't wired that way. But at the end of the day, I think so goes the scholar, like where the scholars go, so goes the generation. Meaning, like, we rise and fall. People don't realize this. No one wants to talk about this, but we don't realize that, like, the fact that we can even read the scripture in English is because of some smart people who decided to pour their life out.
And to embrace the technology of the next generation.
And embrace the cutting edge, you know, printing press and, you know, text and the Dead Sea, like all these things. And I just think I love that. I get fired up. But what would you say about the local parks? Just as important. And like you said, the conversation we're kind of having with of how do we make sure we do both?
Man, I don't have like a well thought out answer to this. I just think it's a wrestle. It's a wrestle and a tension in the era we're living in, because a lot of our lives is online, but we live in a physical place. And I think it can be hard, because sometimes, or maybe for a lot of people, the physical place may not, you may be really lonely. You may not have a community. You may not have a church that you totally align with. You may not totally agree with leadership. And so I actually think.
What? I've never heard of those things.
So I actually think it's more, sometimes it's more difficult to be part of your local, like to be discipled where you
live.
I don't
think sometimes. I think always.
I think it's absolutely harder.
And so I think it is a lot easier to then go online. So I think online, it's like, do that, be fed. They're like, what a gift that you get to like listen to the greatest teachers and thinkers and scholars of our day and be discipled by the Annie Downs and the John Mark Comers and the Jeff Bethke's. Like, what a gift that is. Like, you should go there, and those, like, we as thinkers and teachers should be in that platform. But then you have to be part of your local community. Like, and it's going to be messy, but like, that's what the church is. And we were just talking to mentors of ours a couple nights ago.
And one thing you can't do is don't hold your pastor to the standard of a John Tyson.
They're not
or a John Mark Comer. Like, I don't think we realize there's a crisis at which we're crushing thousands to tens of thousands of American church pastors because they need to be someone who is world-class, and that's just not how it works.
Yeah.
Continue. And we're getting a 30-minute sermon that they've worked on, and with our local pastors, we're living 7 days with them.
Yes.
And like, we are getting pastored in so many ways by our local people that John Mark cannot do, that John cannot do, unless we are at Church of the City, New York.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think even in that, like, I've learned so much lately about how as great as those thinkers are, like, they have their context. Like, they're talking to their church in Portland or their church in New York, and where we live, it's just different. And so we can still take all that, but like, there's something here for us to learn. And so all that to say, I think in your local community, I think it really is like an act of obedience, you know? Like, I think just like what you're saying about, we all have a contribution to make. So asking like, what's my contribution? Why am I here? The Lord, there's that verse in Acts of like, he chooses the times and places and borders of where you're going to live. So there's a reason why you live where you live, with the people you live with, and how can you contribute, and how can you learn? And then like, it really comes down to just obeying. Like, it may be like people you may not be totally like-minded with, or it may be just really messy, but how can you just be faithful? Because I think there is something about being rooted somewhere, having like doing life with people, having them know your ins and outs, bringing a meal to a family.
The one thing, because I basically preach the gospel on how the internet should be used and is amazing. I know, saying that's good news. The one thing that it just inherently cannot do is it's not embodied.
Yeah.
We don't have a theology of embodiment that literally our faith. Like if God believed in like kind of the digital only model, he would have sat in heaven and like thrown a Bible down as a football, right? That's the disembodied version of the word. Now, do we need the disembodied quote unquote at some, yes. But we also need the uppercase word, which is the embodiment, right? That's all John 1 is. It's literally saying like the word embodied itself. And so our entire theology, our entire way of living should be a living of embodiment. Mm-hmm. We should try to embody, take values and principles somewhere in your very body. And I think that's just something that we've kind of lost in our more Western kind of mind-centric. Because I think the mind connects to the did. That's why. It's like we're so just like, if you think it, it must be right. Mm-hmm. Rather, no, you have to live it. You have to own it. You have to be it. You have to show up. Mm-hmm. That's why you look at like the Amish community, the Jewish community, some of these other communities that are a little bit more, I think at least rooted in
holistic
practices. You know, you see Jewish, men, when they pray, they'll a lot of them, especially the Orthodox, will rock back and forth. And you talk to them about that. And most of them will say, it's a small sign of just embodying the prayer. Mm-hmm. It's like you literally, like they engage their five senses with their faith. And that's an actual act of embodiment. But what were you going to say?
Mm-hmm. I think you can't replace the like crying on your girlfriend's couch and having her like hug you and pray for you. Or,
yes.
You know, like.
Amen to that.
But I think those embodiment looking eye to eye to a mentor and being like, this is the messy right now.
I think that's actually kind of weird to do online. Like that should be only. You know
I
mean?
Did
like,
it on Marco Polo this morning only because I had literally gossiped and had to open it back up and go.
I think I don't mean that. That technically is online, but I meant like you know to like a more the one way audience or platform.
Yes, yes.
I think that's it, like people who know you. Like that's just a form of communication with an embodied person. You know.
Or like last week I went over to my friend's house and we did inner healing prayer together, and it's just like this beautiful thing that you can't do online. Yeah. It's like being together physically. There is something about it that I think we need to step into more. Like we're 100%. Holistic people. We're not separated. Sacred and secular aren't separated. Mm-hmm. We're all one being. And so,
That's right. I mean, but Jeff, I knew where you and I would stand in this conversation. Yeah. So I was.
No, I'll go to bat for that one all day.
Me too. And me and Jenny will fight about it. You, John Mark, me, Jenny, we should all just get in a boxing ring. We each get a corner.
No, we should go. I feel like I got this vision in my head of almost like Family Feud. So like they're on one side, we'll be on one side. And we'll actually do like a classic debate on it. That'd be fun.
That's right. I think it'd be really
Jenny,
fun.
If you're watching, we'll do it at IF Gathering.
That's exactly right. Okay, you guys, for all the things y'all are making, all the things you're doing, where can we go and see it all online?
The one hub, jeffandalyssa.com. So, you know, my name is Jeff, J-E-F-F, and then Alyssa, A-L-Y-S-S-A.com. And then I always tell people our Instagram. So I'm probably most active there than anywhere else. Alyssa is basically offline, doesn't exist on the internet. You'll see her stuff. And she hasn't posted in like a year. But if you like to go check it out.
Here we go.
That's our site or Instagram.
Okay, perfect. Hey, a question we're asking everybody. I've been asking everybody all year, so our friends listening are hearing this all over the shows. But your favorite Christmas song? What's your favorite Christmas song?
So first of all, I wouldn't even say favorite song. I would say favorite Christmas musician is what I jump to. And to me, that's Kenny G all day. Kenny G all day. Like, I mean, we're talking to this day. No, we're talking like that is on for 60 to 70 days every single day, morning, lunch, and night. From October.
You're telling me your whole Christmas is saxophone based?
Like, sax all day. Like, it's just so, it's the sexy sax right there that Kenny G just brings the key. So that's him, first of all.
Shocked.
And then on his Millennium album, he has, which came out like 20 years ago, he did a really fun rendition of, how do you say that? Like, it's like Auld Lang Syne or whatever, you know that one?
Oh, yeah, the New Year's song.
Really cool, yes, but he does a really cool version of that where he's, for the Millennium, he spliced, sound bites from the entire 100 years. So it's kind of like a history class in that song. So go look it up. It's a very fun thing. But
that's very cool.
That's my jam and I have it memorized and I love Kenny G.
Does he know you love him?
I need to tell him. I need to tell him. But that man grew up though, man. That man's on Kanye's last album. That man wasn't as being.
Yeah.
I feel like we're like four text messages from Kenny G for you.
Well, then I'm trying to. Well, I mean, I literally am obsessed. And he's from where I'm from. He also got rejected from the University of Washington, which is the more premier music department. So he went to like a Division II music department in school back in college. And then obviously he blew up. So I think UW is like, man, what do we do with our lives?
But, right. Yeah. Okay. Alyssa, do you have an equally as unbelievable answer?
No, I don't. I can't think of my favorite one, but I will say our family's favorite one is Come All You Faithful. So yeah. When Kinsley, our 7-year-old, yes, was
a little too much right now.
Like two, she became obsessed with Christmas and like Christmas PJs all year long. There was one month where she didn't, she only wore her Christmas PJs all day.
Yep.
And then during bedtime, she like got this little Christmas carol packet and she would make us sing 5 different Christmas carols. And finally, like by the time we had our second and third child, we're like, okay, we need to choose one. And so every night it's Come All You Faithful to all 3 of our children.
Bedtime. So it's the bedtime song that we have sang for 5 years. Isn't that hilarious?
So I feel like every time it comes on, we're like, this is our song.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I don't even, until this interview, I didn't realize how weird that is. Just because it was like, oh, the kids requested we moved. Like, we have sang a Christmas song for bedtime for 5 years. I just
every
realized
night.
That.
Every night.
And Lucy now will be like, Mom, sing the mermaid version. So I'll have to throw in mermaid with there. Like, come on,
that's just
you
a 3-year-old's brain. Yes,
or,
exactly.
You know, like,
it gets weird. You have to spice it up a little bit when you do it every day.
All of the, well, all the words? Or
no,
just one
I do like the 20-second version. Yeah, yeah.
We just do like the chorus.
Yeah, because 5 years ago we did the whole thing, but 5 years in, come all you faithful, joyful and adore him, we're done.
And that's actually what Jeff does. I have to sing it out a little more. He goes, yeah.
And I start mumbling. I come all you faithful. I start mumbling, for he alone is worthy, he alone is worthy, he alone is worthy. We love you. We love you. Good night.
Yeah. I mean, I've never had a kid, but I love when you said Kinsley used to make us. I'm like, I don't know that that's how that works, but I guess it does. She makes us sing 5 songs.
Yeah, that's a weird part of it too. That we just kind of like signed it. We just, yes, sure.
And then, that was back before you wrote a parenting book. Now you're like, listen, now I'm ready. Is there anything we didn't talk about that y'all want to make sure we talk about?
No, this was so fun.
No,
we love talking with you.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I love y'all. I'm so thankful we're friends. The last question we always ask, because the show is called That Sounds Fun, tell me what sounds fun to you.
A good book and a smoked old fashioned that I made myself. Now, non-alcoholic if you're a Baptist, but.
And the fire. You do a fire every night.
Yes. I sit outside. No, I don't do a smoked old fashioned every night. I'm not that. I'm like a Sabbath only drinker at some level, meaning I'll have like a drink on Sabbath. But yeah, I go out and sit out night at a fire by myself, or if there's people here, they're out there with me. But I probably do a fire every single night. It's not raining.
What are you reading right now?
I just am in the just finished. What's it? I think it's called 4,000 Weeks.
You are the second person to say that this week.
Seriously?
Yes.
I've really loved it. It's because I mean I've read so many books on rest and Sabbath and time and productivity that I started getting a little tapped out. But this one, Rez recommended too, and for exactly the anti-reason of that. They're like, they're like, it's literally a book written, like the first chapter is the guy explaining that same thing. He's like, I'm so tapped out on productivity and trying to get better at my to-do list and time. There's got to be a way to do it that's not like, that's just normal. And so I think that's the subtitle. It's like time management for mere mortals or something.
Yes,
and
yes,
it's really good. It's really good.
Okay. Alyssa, what sounds fun to you?
Reading, and then also like being in a room with a bunch of friends and laughing really hard.
Mm.
What are you reading right now? Are you reading something we need to read?
I'm just finishing up The Pastor by Eugene Peterson. I'm on a Eugene Peterson kick, so I'm just
his autobiography.
Reading all his stuff. So
I did that a couple of years ago. I read Madeline L'Engle's library. It's just so fun. Jump up, pick an author who's got a handful of them and spend a year getting to know that author. I love
it. I'm 100% on that team. If you find someone you like, read the canon. Read the entire thing.
Well, I feel like I read his autobiography, and then I was like, I want to know.
You read his biography, and then you want to read one. Yes. You read Burning in My Bones first.
Okay, yes.
Which would be a biography.
Even though he didn't write it? That's a biography?
Autobiography is when so you read the biography.
Okay. Then I read the autobiography, and now I'm reading his works. So.
Which is, that's a fascinating thing to read, is the biography and the autobiography back to back. Like, she read them, so like that's a fun kind of someone else's version and his version.
It's been fun. Yeah.
P.S. I don't ever want anyone to write a biography because every one of my books is an autobiography.
Exactly.
That's what we do. Yes. That's our actual genre.
Yes. Yeah, that's so true. It's like, there's nothing left to write about.
Yeah. Don't get my journals.
I've extracted every last ounce and story and moment and meaning from the last 2 years every time a book comes out.
I have told you everything I was actually willing to tell you. So if it is in the book, it's because I don't want it in the book.
Exactly. So I don't want someone else to do it either.
That's right. All right. Love you guys. Merry Christmas. Thanks for doing this.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, you guys, don't you love them? Oh, I just think the world of them. Hey, be sure to pick up a copy of Satisfied and Take Back Your Family. Go follow them for all kinds of wise and helpful content so you can tell them thanks for being on the show. If you need anything else to read, I'm embarrassingly easy to find. Annie F. Downs on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the places you may need me. That's how you can find me. I think that's it for me today on this Saturday, my friends. Go out or stay home and do something that sounds fun to you, and I will do the same. Today, what sounds fun to me, I'm smiling ear to ear, because what sounds fun to me is telling you who's going to be on the show tomorrow. So y'all have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow for a special Sunday episode, day 11 of the 12 Days of Christmas, with someone who has impacted my 2021 in some really profound ways. Y'all, tomorrow we get to talk to Father Mike Schmitz. Tomorrow, Father Mike is here. Oh my gosh, you guys, we'll see you back here tomorrow.
Hey, this is Rachel Myers.
And Amanda Bible Williams of She Reads Truth. My favorite Christmas song is The Christmas Song by Russ Taff. Just trust me. Look it up.
And I love, love, love forever Silver Bells, but specifically by Harry Connick Jr. He takes a while to lead up to it, but it is worth it. Such a good song.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with the King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.